haven't slept, can't sleep, I'm tired, always tired, it's tiring.
24/7, a wake-up call for our non-stop world.
Always on technological developments such as television, video gaming, online gambling, internet pornography have intensified our 24/7 consumption, disrupting our distinct periods of waking and sleeping. The battle for our attention doesn't confine itself to our waking hours. We live our lives in sleep mode, a deceptive term meaning never on or off. That companies create products that capitalize on both our tiredness and on our anxieties from our disrupted sleep. We need sleep to survive. Denying sleep is used as a form of torture. 24/7 life, with its pressure to constantly pay attention, is indifferent to our need for sleep. Sleep is now a symbol for the shrinking part of our lives when we are not paying attention, browsing, or consuming. I'm Sarah Cook. I'm the curator of 24/7 at Somerset House, an exhibition that addresses the non-stop nature of our lives today.
I am Ian Forsyth, and I am an artist resident at Somerset House Studios.
I'm Jane Pollard. I'm the other half of the collaboration, artist and filmmaker.
And I'm Stuart Evers. I'm the writer of Somnoproxy, which is part of this project.
Somnoproxy is an immersive audio installation. It was made specially for this exhibition, 24/7. Originally, years ago, it started its life as a performance with Moog Sound Lab at Ace Hotel. It's a kind of bedtime story. As the viewer of it, you enter a room and lie down on a bed. This bed is no ordinary bed.
We kind of thought of the work, I think, as a movie without pictures. And part of the installation is a contraption called a dream machine. The dream machine was created by an artist called Brian Gyson and Ian Somerville, who was a sort of 60s kind of technical guru who did an awful lot of work with William Burroughs and advised him on a number of projects. And together they invented the dream machine. The dream machine is a cylinder with holes cut into it that rotates on a rotating platform. The original was built on a record turntable, so it spins like a record. Tube has holes cut into it. A light bulb is suspended inside it, and what that does is create a pattern of flickering light that, if you close your eyes and focus on those flickers, they flicker at a specific rate that generates a hypnagogic state, and the movie appears on the back of your eyelids. It's been described as the only artwork you look at, you see with your eyes closed.
Ian and Jane approached me to write the story. I was given three stipulations that it must include gin, must include hotels, and must include sleep. It's very interesting for me because I'm very interested in sleep, gin, and I love hotels, so it was a nice nexus for me to work with. Part of the installation now, and as was in the live performance piece, was about our interaction with technology from the very analog to the very kind of digital world in which we live. Technology allows us to have our wishes come true. So we can say one day, I wish there was something that would do X, Y, or Z. And suddenly someone has said, well, actually there is. So if you look at all the really great technological breakthroughs that have been made in the internet age particularly, you're looking at things like, oh, I wish that I could just listen to any song in the world. Well, now you can. I wish there was a way that I could just order something and it arrive the same day. Well, you can do that through various different places. So I was thinking about what would be the next logical stage. What would you want to do? And I thought, well, in our time-pressed world, wouldn't it be great if we knew that we could definitely get a good night's sleep? How would we go about that? And as I was thinking along those lines, I suddenly thought about con men and how a con man would be able to use that. The idea for the story was to have a central character called Hal, who comes to this stonking realization one day that this is the next big con, the long con that he's got. So he goes off and tries to find very rich people who can't sleep and come up with something which he thinks sounds plausible. Originally, what he wants to do is actually say that he'll sleep for them so they can stay awake for 24 hours. But soon he realizes that isn't really going to fly. People will soon work that one out.
Somnoproxy promises little and delivers even less. It is, like all dubious sciences, just plausible enough for the credulous and desperate to give it a go. The idea came to me in jail, as my cellmate tossed and turned for the eighth straight night. I thought about something my mother had once said when I was ill. If I could take your pain, my boy, I would. At that moment, I wished I could sleep for him, to give him my sleep. Was there not something in the idea of sleeping for a living?
The next best thing that he comes up with is what he calls somnoproxy, which is the that he meets with the person, they do like a psychometric test, a personality test between them to see if they're compatible, which of course they always are. And then he will go and sleep in a hotel room or a new apartment, in one case a bus, to make sure that person will be able to sleep there. And he writes them a little report and they can go there and think, oh, brilliant, yeah, I'll definitely get a good night's sleep. And that was the genesis of the story, and him meeting Juliana, who is a very, very rich kind of Steve Jobs style character who can't sleep and suddenly begins to depend entirely upon him so that she can sleep.
My device blinks, his hotel report ready for review. They're singular, these reports, and each one is a joy. I admire the way he writes, the way his humour sorts the dish. The important matter is that of the dreams and that of the quality of the sleep are too precise, too scientific, that I've long stopped reading.
The device that you lie on, the thing that kind of looks like a very expensive bed in the installation, is called Island. It's built by a company called L-Acoustics, and it is described by them as a personal auditorium. It's essentially a device that can be turned into a bed or a desk or a sofa, but within the device is this immersive surround sound system based on multiple speakers and multiple sub-bass speakers. And the thing that really excites us about it as a way to deliver the experience to the audience that come to see Somnoproxy is that by lying essentially on the playback system, you completely feel the sound. You don't just hear it, you physically hear it moving through your body.
The appropriateness for taking this story that Stuart wrote and actually allowing a viewer to be in a sleeping position whilst experiencing it, and experiencing it with that level of like sonic power, so that it's not just, you're not just hearing it, you're feeling it, you're riding it in some ways. It is like a kind of odd roller coaster for the senses, yeah.
The average person takes 7 minutes to fall asleep. I've got this down to under 3. As with everything, the key to success is practice and routine. I wear the same shorts and t-shirts no matter the weather. Always drink half a pint of water before getting into bed. Under the covers, I put in Howard Leight laser light earplugs. Close eyes and think of Juliana.
If you came across, if you came across an app called Somnoproxy in the kind of butterfly mindfulness sort of area of the app store, I'd totally go for it. It sounds utterly plausible, absolutely legit.
Yeah, I mean, that was the whole point, and Hal's great quest is to make sure it sounds utterly convincing and utterly just obvious. And I think that's one of the great things when someone says to you, you know, this app's going to help you make you sleep or, you know, conceive a child or whatever. You're like, oh, God, I'm down with that. I know exactly what that means. We're in a situation where we can commodify anything and any aspect of our lives. So anything is up for grabs and anything is there for people to exploit. And the things which we really, really care about are things that we feel helpless about. And one of those things is sleep. You know, you don't have to look at Twitter for any length of time with people saying, oh, I'm in, you know, haven't slept, I can't sleep, I'm tired, always tired, it's tiring.
And there are those remaining basic primal things that we need that can't really be absolutely replaced by technology. You know, we're not yet, hopefully never will be, in that stage where, like an electric car, we can somehow be plugged in and charged, that we can be rebooted or refreshed.
But it doesn't stop those industries from coming into existence. Yeah. I mean, you know, there is a huge industry in techniques and devices and apps and all the rest of it that will help you feel more energized. Might not be able to actually give you more energy, but to create the illusion in your own mind that you have. I mean, you know, one of the things that the iPhone does now that I don't think it even did when you were originally conceived as Somnoproxy is, you know, the screen time app that you can use your iPhone to help you break your habit of spending too much time on your iPhone. I mean, it's beyond comedy. You can't, you know, jokes like that wouldn't work. They wouldn't fly, but they're true. There's a reality. You know, your phone is going to help you spend less time on your phone.
But that's just it, isn't it? That plugged in world, and we're all plugged in so many ways. You know, the concept of the 24/7 exhibition is all about that being plugged in, but also even though we say it's 24/7, I think we're going to get beyond that, where every aspect of our life is going to be plugged in, because we'll need it and we'll expect it.
It's strange that the terminology plugged in makes it sound somehow alert, when actually it to all intents and purposes seems to kind of check out. The moment you engage your phone, particularly in the presence of others, is the moment that you're checking out of that conversation and you're entering into the world of your phone. And often with no real intention, you know, it's not like you have a path in mind or a particular thing that you need to do. It's simply just not to be in the present moment. So you know, you have a look at Instagram and you check your Facebook and you look at your emails and you check the BBC News. And
like, is the present moment so terrible that anything, literally anything, is better than experiencing right here, right now?
I don't think it's better. I just think that our concept and our understanding of what the present is has radically altered over a very short space of time. You know, I always used to say that the artistic impulse was basically one out of undue boredom with what's around us, you know, and like a feeling that I have to be doing something has to be done. You know, just sitting around not doing anything, it gives you kind of the fear and you know, the artistic impulse is to try and take that boredom and make something out of it.
Yeah, and all those great bands and all the rest of it that come out of people being bored and wanting to do something.
And I think that, what's happened now is that your boredom is alleviated by minuscule distractions and ones that are updated constantly. We demand some form of attention. You know, and
is
whether
it
that's
attention? Because for me, it feels like the filling of time. It feels, and when you observe people doing it, they become like all the words you're using feel incredibly active or proactive, and yet you watch somebody and they almost become empty, like a vessel or a passive in there, where you have almost no access, and it. It makes me wonder about the connection between this plugging in or almost checking out due to technology and sleep, because sleep is the other way in which we escape the present moment. And we do it for good reason, but it is even if you're on a train or you're in a lecture and you know, you're tired or you just don't want to be there, one way of escape is sleep.
In the dream, Juliana and I are in love. Hanging by the window is what looks like a wedding dress. On the floor is a morning suit. And we've always been in love. Outside, I can hear the boats honk, the harbour teeming. Somehow a baby is between us. She is small and downy. She has her mother's eyes. Juliana has always been clear about dreams. The erotic is off limits. Any such dream, and I am to ignore it immediately. I could not stay where you've had such dreams, she once said, and where I might have similar.
produce the one thing, certainly at the moment, that A, you can't control, but B, nobody else can look at.
You also feel like when you're watching somebody, when you're listening to somebody tell you their dream, you feel like you're watching someone trying to hold water in their bare hands. As soon as you start putting it into words, as soon as you start trying to kind of articulate or make sense, you're losing it. Like, you lose your connection to it and you lose your confidence, and therefore skills have to come in, storytelling skills. So it becomes about whether that person's an interesting raconteur or not, as to whether they can weave something salvageable from the wreckage of the dream that's just slipped out of their hands.
The dreams are something that people could probably monetize. I remember watching a television program where there was a guy who was working on a machine that would half wake you when you got to a certain level of sleep, whereupon you can control your dreams. And he reckoned that he'd worked out. Clearly, he hadn't, because otherwise he'd be a multi-billionaire by now, and we'd all know who he was. But it's an interesting idea, the manipulation of dreams. But again, once you start getting to a point where your dreams are able to be manipulated by something or someone, even if it's yourself, you're losing something fundamental about the whole process of dreaming, something that has been intrinsic to all of humanity throughout history, that has given rise to all of our hopes and dreams. Even Frankenstein, supposedly came from a dream. If you start messing around with that fundamentals of human psychology, at what point do those dreams which are necessary, I know that scientists are often debatable as to what entirely dreams are for, but
it's kind of half-baked abstractions. The same as daydreaming, half-baked abstractions. They're then almost the moment you try and pin them down or make them make sense, they become something else, or they become not useful anymore. But those things that pierce the back of your consciousness and come in often cloaked in a slightly different form. They're like a half an idea or a hunch or a feeling. And I think dreams live in that space.
You believe in anything that appears to work, that it is based on falsity is immaterial. Except now. In a day, she'll be in this city, waking. Her eyes opening onto a morning, onto a day of work, of meetings and presentations. She will head to the bathroom and she will be in love. She will realise that she is as in love as I have been these years. Or not. Nothing will happen. After all, it's all just a scam.
The positive action of downloading the app or of choosing the CD is the first step, and probably psychologically the most important step that you've taken. Mm. So it's exactly why the bogus concept of somnoproxy is utterly plausible and works, because you want so much to be able to have a peaceful night's sleep and to be refreshed and continue with your work kind of uninterrupted, unheeded. Mm. And so the act of paying someone to sleep in a hotel room before you sleep there, to be sure that the kind of all of the sort of atmospheric conditions, the temperature, the ambience, the linen, the dream scope, everything in that space is going to be kind of premium to you having the perfect night's sleep. Psychologically, that's already put you in a good space.
Yeah. And that's what Juliana admits, and what she realises once the intervention has been staged, when basically she collapses and her bosses, who are desperate for her not to conk out and that would be a problem for the company that she's the founder of, is that it works initially for her, but she's not stupid. She sees through it. She knows. But in fact, she's just got better because of this burgeoning friendship with Hal, which she knows is predicated on a lie, but within that there is this sense of, you've given me something back. You have given me something which is absolutely priceless. That it doesn't matter how much she pays out for it, because it works. And that's ultimately what how technology works. It's like it's just as much as people are willing to pay for it. It's like, how much will you pay in order for this to happen?
I recall being a teenager and feeling like I was a failure because I couldn't sleep, that somehow I wasn't doing it properly. And of course, it simply is that you've worked yourself into a state that in which you can no longer feasibly switch off long enough to sleep. I'm now a professional sleeper, though.
One of the things about somnolence proxy was one of my own personal fears, which is the fear that I wouldn't be able to go to sleep. Because I've always been a pretty good sleeper, but the fear that one day I just, that it wouldn't happen. And that terrifies me. You know, that idea that, and the thought of having to go through that.
You're trapped in a present moment that you can't escape from.
Yes, exactly.
With the knowledge that if you try and escape from it by filling it with stuff on your phone, that the blue light from your phone is meaning that you'll never go to sleep anyway. So, vicious circles.
You can get an app to filter the blue light.
In seeing the work installed and seeing Somnoproxy in the way it is in 24/7 has brought out an element to it that I hadn't at all anticipated. So we'd thought and hoped that the room itself and the act of going in and lying down would feel like a hotel room, like it would work within the parameters of the story. However, having experienced it a couple of times now, there's something of the sort of scientific experimental that you feel like you're subjecting yourself to in participating. There's something about going in and taking your shoes off and lying on this bed and the lights going and then the sound starts up and you're literally vibrated from almost the kind of moment it starts, and it feels like Clockwork Orange, the experiment with his eyes. Or
sleep, I think, does have some sort, I wouldn't want to overstate it, but some sort of analogy with the idea of the unexplored, the unknown, the depths of the oceans, the edges of the solar system. You know, it's a place we aren't yet fully able to visit and aren't yet fully able to understand. And if we're ever to break down the barriers and unravel all of those mysteries, will it lose its magic? I don't know, but I think there's going to be a lot of fun to be had on those journeys.
As Jonathan Crary, author of the book 24/7, suggests, sleep is one of the few remaining experiences where, knowingly or not, we abandon ourselves to the care of others. Sleep is a remission, a release from the constant continuity of all the threads in which one is enmeshed while waking. Jonathan Reakey here, director of Somerset House and co-curator of 24/7. The exhibition was conceived when I read Jonathan Crary's brilliant book, 24/7, subtitled Late Capitalism and the Ends of Sleep, published by Verso in 2013. And it's this book that has inspired us in making this exhibition. The themes and subject matter felt very timely and urgent. And one of the reasons it suggested itself immediately as the subject of an exhibition was because I knew many artists at Somerset House Studios were making work based on the themes of the book. Thanks for listening to the 24/7 podcast. The exhibition continues at Somerset House until the 23rd of February 2020. So with that in mind, I wish you a good night's sleep and sweet dreams.
Insomnia is bad for business.